Blog Talk Radio.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise
high as the
History Month, History Speaks Part 1, sponsored by Gospel Gold. This is not the regular Gospel Gold program. I am the host, Reverend Michael Rogers. Of course, you know that Gospel Gold comes on every Monday night from the hour of 9 to 10 p.m. Every Monday night from the hour of 9 to 10 p.m. You can go to the Facebook page. Go to the Gospel Gold Facebook page. Be a part of the Gospel Gold community. There you will find information concerning Gospel Gold. You'll find some of the music that we play on Gospel Gold. You'll also find the link each week for the Gospel Gold program. So we invite you to go to the Facebook page of Gospel Gold, and you can find all the information about Gospel Gold. It's not just another music program. It is a program dedicated to the preservation of traditional African-American gospel music. We celebrate Black History every Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. But this is not Gospel Gold tonight. Tonight we have come, I wanted to do an interview historians during Black History Month. I wanted to speak to those people who have dedicated their lives and their teaching and studying history, because I think it's so important for us to realize that so much of our history in the past was lost. So we must make sure that our history goes on as a people for the future generations. And I wanted to talk to a teacher. I wanted to talk to someone who knew history and knew it in a way that could relate it to the layman or to those of us who are not well-versed in history. And I have with me tonight historian Dr. William Rogers, my brother, who is a professor of African-American studies at retired from the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, and he also hosts the Black Reality Think Tank, which can be heard every Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, on the Time for Awakening Network. You can go to the Time for Awakening Network, and in the search portal, you can type in Black Reality Think Tank, or you can go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page, and you can find the link for the program every Tuesday night. Every Tuesday night, a wonderful program to discuss all the pertinent issues of the African-American community and the diaspora. And I wanted to have someone, I'm doing a series of these interviews, hopefully about three of them, and I'm going to be playing them throughout the Gospel Gold season. The Gospel Gold season starts back up on February the 28th. February the 28th, we will start the new season of Gospel Gold. I'm going to be playing these interviews throughout the season of Gospel Gold, because I think it's very important that we go back to our history as we go forward and backward in our music history as well. So I wanted to call, wanted to have someone who would come on tonight, just a one-on-one conversation. Now, I got to tell you this. When you tune into the Black Reality Think Tank, you're going to hear some of the most thought-provoking, some of the most stimulating conversation, particularly in the African-American community, that you can possibly hear. Some of it is very heavy conversation. All of his guests are people who are well adverse in their endeavors, and they know their subjects well. But tonight, I wanted to just come and speak to him as a student, as someone. I know you've had questions about history. I have certainly had questions about history. And I know that many of us who are not perhaps well-read or don't know anything about history or don't know as much as we should know about history, I wanted to come with a program tonight, History 101, Black History 101, as I call it. And I wanted to speak to someone tonight who could break it down for us in a way that we can understand it. Again, I'm speaking directly as a person who, like many of us, who have not found history appealing, or who have not read a lot of history, or who have not studied a lot of history. But I wanted to bring someone tonight who could speak to us from that perspective. I know that a lot of us know something about Black history, but there are some things that a lot of us don't know. And I wanted to bring someone tonight who could discuss that. So I thank Dr. Rogers for being on the line. And perhaps we can inspire some young people to study history, to go into the history field, to be history professors and history teachers and history chronicles that chronicle our history. These things are very important. We got to have historians as we go forward. So I'm glad to have Dr. Rogers on the line tonight. He's going to speak with us just for a while. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the Black Reality Think Tank. Dr. Rogers, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. Good evening, Brother Rogers. How are you?
Good. I am so glad that you were able to join me tonight, and I wanted to just speak to you on a one-on-one basis. I know a lot of times we have these call-in programs where others could call in, but I just wanted to be you and me, brother to brother, and I wanted to just talk about some questions and some things that I have in my mind. I know others may have the same questions in their mind as well. Dr. Rogers, first of all, could you explain what drew you to study history?
Okay, and this might be very surprising to some, as the others know, and I know you know where how we were raised. Mm-hmm. We were raised by parents who were educators.
Mm-hmm.
They taught school, and they taught they were administrators in schools. In schools, mm-hmm. And as you know, our house was always full of books. There were books, and a lot of times in our chores and our duties, when we had to clean the house on Saturday, we would have to pick all those books out of the bookcase and dust the bookcase.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
In doing that, in some cases, you know, we would look at the books and see things that, you know, as young people being inquisitive to that. And then the second area was church.
Mm-hmm.
We belonged to a Baptist church, and we attended a Baptist church. That taught a lot about Black history. And at that time, you might not have been, there used to be a program at our church called BTU.
Oh, yeah.
And
uh-huh.
BT was Baptist Training Union. And they used to have it in the evenings, like 5, 6 o'clock. And we would go to BTU. And at the BTU, not only did we study scripture and Bible, but we talked about Black history.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it started.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we prepared to get into the grade schools, we went to a, as you know, we were part of a segregated school system. At the time I was there, in the 50s, all of the schools were segregated. Mm-hmm. All of our teachers were African Americans, and all of them taught us about black history. And I'm not just talking Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman. No, I'm talking in extensive groups of people they talked about. I remember learning the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar. And a lot of Paul Laurence Dunbar's poetry was in dialect. And I used to ask my mother why they talk like that. And she would explain to me the history of what that was and what is it they were trying to do. So in a nutshell, that's where it started. That's the seed that began. And then as I was, I got older, went to college, it became a little bit more mature. But those were the early years of developing.
Yes, I remember those days well. Another question that I've always wanted to ask a historian is that we were fortunate in that we had that type of support system with us, and the black church and the black school and the black teachers and all of that. But for those who did not, you know, we carried the history book, that big history book around with us all throughout school. And we learned about George Washington, and we learned about Abraham Lincoln, and we learned about Thomas Jefferson, and we learned, we had civics classes, we learned about the three branches of government, the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branch. We learned about the War of 1812. But we did not, a lot of them did not have the opportunity that we had. Why is that so important? And why is it so important for us to have that black history with our people today?
Well, now, very clearly, to cut right to the chase, as you know, the organization of Black History Celebration was started by Carter G. Woodson.
Mm-hmm.
And he started that back in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And he has laid out the framework, I think, best to understand why it's important. And one of the things that he said, and his landmark book was a book called The Miseducation of the Negro.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, he talks about a lot of things, and particularly about history and why you should study history. And one of the things that he says that history shows that it doesn't matter, for instance, who's in power or what revolutionary forces can take over the government or who's running the government or who's the president. It doesn't matter all of that. If people have not learned for themselves and they have to depend on other people to tell them about their history. So the key is you must learn your own history. And you must learn that from your perspective. As I said earlier, they taught us in school, Negro History Week, we used to have plays. And we would put on plays about Benjamin Banneker. I knew about Benjamin Banneker in the third grade in the 1950s and other that of significance, those Harlem Renaissance people. We learned that. So you must learn your history, and you have to learn it from yourself because that helps you take pride in your race and take pride in who you are.
Yeah.
Like he said, Carter Woodson said, if a race has no history, it has no worthwhile tradition. And then it becomes a negligible factor thought of the world, and it stands in danger of being exterminated. And today, as I look out over the stage of life, I'm scared because I see some of that happening.
Wow. Another question. Why is it important for us? Why is it important for us to know about Africa and to study Africa as well? That connection.
Basically, the truth is that's where you came from. That's your home. America is not our home, in a sense. And I know a lot of people will probably frown when I say that, but it's not. Our ancestors, our grandparents, our great-great-grandparents, great-great-great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-grandparents came over here in the hold of a slave ship, chained and shackled.
Mm-hmm.
and were released into the Virginias and the Carolinas and the Georgias and the Mississippis and the Alabama to work for other people for no pay. And where we came from, when we came over here, we were not, they didn't bring slaves to America. The people that they brought to America were business people. They were educators. They were craftsmen. They were farmers. They were mothers, fathers, husbands, brothers. They weren't slaves. They were made to be slaves. Or as I say, enslaved, because I don't like to use the word anymore, that we were slaves. It's enslaved. And so I think that's why we need to know where we came from. We need to know our culture. Most of us got here from West Africa, somewhere between Ghana and down to the bottom of Angola, somewhere in there we came from. And we need to understand that, because a lot of who we are, the things that we do, the way we wear our hair, our dialect, the way we talk and walk and eat, and our interests come out of Africa.
How does landmass equate with culture?
Say that for me once again.
How does the landmass, because we are people who have no land, and I think Africa is that landmass that relates to the culture as well.
Yes, yeah. You have to have, everything is related to land, as you said. It's related to the land, not skin color. Skin color does not make up a culture. First of all, it's a misconcept. It's a social construct. Color was used to divide people. It's where you come from. There are people here in America that come from Ireland. They're called Irish Americans. There are people who are here who come from Italy. They're called Italian Americans, German Americans. Hispanics, Mexican Americans, you know, Japanese Americans. Now, and America being the place that they've landed, but who they are is something totally different. It's based on a land recognition.
Yes.
And you have to do that too. We are not black. There's no country, no land called black. Why we call ourselves black Americans? We are the only people that have no identity in terms of what we come from. We call ourselves black, Negro, colored, all kind of stuff. Anything but African.
Another thing I've always wondered, or I have seen recently, during Black History Month, the first person always comes up is Martin Luther King. Now, we know we love Martin Luther King. We know he made great achievements as a writer, as a preacher, as an activist. And we always talk about Martin Luther King. We talk about Harriet Tubman and maybe Frederick Douglass. You may get a Frederick Douglass every now and then. But why don't we hear more about people like Malcolm X? Why don't we hear more about people like Fannie Lou Hamer? Why don't we hear more about people who may have not done as much or been as recognized as Martin Luther King or anything like that? Why is that?
It's because it's political. Most of our history in the past was written by whites, and they wrote what was favorable to them. We didn't write our history until much later into the 20th century that we began to write our own history. So a lot of our identification was done by people who were not us. And so Harriet Tubman, even though she was a strong revolutionary, she was not necessarily anything too negative that whites might not like to be considered. Fannie Lou Hamer was a defiant revolutionary. Nat Turner, defiant revolutionary. And that did not meet with the system very well. And so as a result of that, they wouldn't allow it in schools. I did not learn about Marcus Garvey until I went to college.
Well, that's where I'm going next. But if you finish with that, I'm going to ask you, who is Marcus Garvey?
Okay, Marcus Garvey was around. He was a Jamaican that was came to New York at about 1911, 1910. He was a very strong idealist about the liberation for African people. He believed that America and England and all of those places would never grant African people freedom, that it just wasn't going, that we were their property and we were here to work for them for no money or for as little money as possible, and that we would always be in bondage and we would always have struggles as long as we lived in America and England and in those European countries. So he decided that he was going to get, first of all, African people to become familiar with their culture where they were born and raised, which is Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And so he spent a lot of time creating an organization called the United Negro Improvement Association, which was known as UNIA. And his job was to teach African people that they were somebody, that they were not useless, worthless, head-scratching, foot-shuffling lackeys, that they were strong men and women and had always been strong men and women. And so then he proposed that if this doesn't work, we need to consider going back to Africa. And so he started a movement called Back to Africa, where African people would consider moving back. He wasn't the first one either. And when I tell you who was one of the first ones, most people wouldn't believe it. But it's true. You can document it.
I know who it is, but go ahead and tell us.
Say it again.
I know who it is, but go ahead and tell us.
I'm not hearing you real clear.
I said, go ahead and tell us who it was.
Oh, okay. The one of the people that started the Back to Africa movement was a man known as Prince Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who Prince Hall was. And so all of my brothers out there who might be hearing my voice, our dear brother Prince Hall recognized the same thing. He was living in Boston at the time, and there was an attempt to try to, he wanted to liberate black folks. He wanted to create independent black schools so our children could go to school and be taught by our own people. Mm-hmm. And he did all those things, but Boston wouldn't support it at all. And so he decided that he was going to work with a man named Paul Cuffey. And Paul Cuffey had purchased a ship. And they were going to start shipping people back to Liberia. That was going to be the first place they were going to go. They were going to go to Liberia. But the history at that time wouldn't allow them to travel on the ocean, because the British had blockaded the Atlantic Ocean because of a conflict between America and Britain called the War of 1812.
Right, right, right. So what happened to Marcus Garvey?
His people turned on him. You know, that's one of the unfortunate things about us. We've got what they call this Willie Lynch syndrome, where we talk about each other and we do things behind each other's back and we cut each other's throat. That's a bad trait we have sometimes. Some of us, not all of us, some of us do that. And that's what happened. His own people began to turn against him. And some folk who were not his own people, who just didn't like him and didn't like the ideology that he had, consorted with the Europeans and the FBI, and they had him arrested. And he was eventually deported back to Jamaica. And he went back to Jamaica and went over to England for a little while, and he died very shortly thereafter.
Well, thank you so very much.
That was the most successful movement. That was one of the most successful movements for the liberation of African-American people that has ever existed in America. And he influenced so many very important people. One of the people he influenced was the Elijah Muhammad. Honorable Elijah Muhammad from the Nation of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
He influenced him. He influenced a black preacher out of New York who was also a very strong advocate at that time. His name is slipping my mind right this minute, but I'll think of it in a minute. But but he was he influenced him.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back, and I want to talk about the Black Reality Think Tank.
Okay.
We're talking with Dr. William Rogers, professor, retired professor of African American Studies, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and the host of the Black Reality Think Tank. It can be heard on every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on the Time for Awakening Network. We're going to take a couple of minute break, get a sip of water, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Black Reality Think Tank. So stay with us. To History Speaks, sponsored by Gospel Gold. Every Monday night at 9 p.m., Gospel Gold celebrates Black history. You can tune in right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am the host, Reverend Michael Rogers, and I would be so very glad if you would join me every Monday night starting February the 28th at 9 p.m. Be a part of the Gospel Gold community. We're talking tonight with Dr. William Rogers, who is a professor of Africology at the University of Wisconsin. And he's also the host of a very important radio, internet radio program called the Black Reality Think Tank. If you have not heard the Black Reality Think Tank, if you have not tuned in, please do so. You can go to the Time for Awakening website, and in the search portal, you can put in Black Reality Think Tank, or you can go to the Black Reality Think Tank Facebook page. Go there, join, don't forget to like and then share so others will know about the Black Reality Think Tank. There you will find all the information about the Black Reality Think Tank, and you'll find you can find the programs that have been recorded in the past as well as the present program. So I invite you to go there every Tuesday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central Time, the Black Reality Think Tank. Dr. Rogers, what inspired you to start or to do this Black Reality Think Tank talk show?
Okay, I had taught in the university for 25 years, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And as you indicated, I taught in the Department of Anthropology. I taught most of the history courses, and I also taught some of the religious studies courses. Mm-hmm. And when I retired in 2014, it was in my blood so thick that I wanted to do more, and I wanted to continue because I have witnessed people being revitalized once they learn their real history.
Mm-hmm.
I have watched them change their lives. I have actually seen that. The University of Wisconsin is basically a university of European Americans. Mm-hmm. They probably are about 70 to 75% of the student body is whites, and the remainder is they're split up between Hispanics, Asian Americans, Native American people, and African Americans, with the African Americans dominating that large minority group of that. And so on a given semester, my classes would be 50 to 60 students sometimes in those large courses, and then some of the more specialized courses, you might get about 35 or 40. But regardless of what it was, most of the time, 70% of the members in the class were white, and they were taking Black history courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I have watched them change their whole thought pattern. They'll come up to me after class is over. They said, I never knew that about Black people. I never understood that, you know, and they would go and go. So anyway, make a long story short, I decided that I wanted to continue, even though I had retired. I would get from time to time a lot of lecture opportunities, a lot of speaking engagements. Thanks to you, you gave me a couple of speaking engagements at your churches. Mm-hmm. And then and I continued, and then I moved to Georgia, and I got a couple of speaking engagements there. And then eventually, once I had left and was getting to move around, COVID hit. And it shut down everything.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, no more speaking engagements, no way going out. So as the old folks used to say, if they give you lemons, turn it into lemonade.
Amen. Amen.
And I decided to use the technology that everybody's using and continue the work I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Black Reality Think Tank came. And not only that, but I would get a little bit more intense with terms of talking the history and the culture, you know, and ask questions that will begin to solve things.
Mm-hmm.
And begin to sort of come up with solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can talk history all day, but we need solutions. And
mm-hmm.
so, and it's a think tank. So people come together and we think about what the possibility of solutions are.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's right.
I have been listening to the Black Reality Think Tank for a couple of years now. And I tell you, I thoroughly enjoy it. I have learned so much from listening to the show. Could you tell us some of the subjects that you discuss on Black Reality Think Tank?
Right. There are some pivotal things that I will always talk about. They are pillars of ideas that you have to discuss. One, that I think the dominant one, is examining the relationship of the Black family and
mm-hmm.
keeping the Black family together. That's one of the number one areas that we talk about. And there's a lot of things that branch off from that whole idea of talking about the Black family. And some of those things are things like the incarceration rate and what that incarceration does to a family. A couple of weeks ago, we had a group of mothers who have children who are in prison right now. And we had them to come on and talk about what that does to the family. What that
mm-hmm.
does to them, to the mindset, you know, and how do you cope with that? And then obviously the husbands and mates who are in prison and have to leave their family and are incarcerated sometimes 5, 10, 15 years. How does the family survive like that? And now we're getting a lot of women in prison. So we talk about prison. The other thing that we talk about that you've got to talk about is the quality of education. We are being educated by people who really don't care about our children. And I'm not saying all of them. There are a lot of them. They do it for salary. They sit there in that classroom day after day. But do they really care? And that's the question we have to ask. And so, like tomorrow's program, we're going to talk about a school out of New York that decided that they weren't going to take it no more, and they were going to teach their own kids and use their own subject matter, and how that worked out for them, and what happened, you know, and so forth and so on, and how can people do it today? So education is one area that we talk about. And then things like relationships, you know. There's only two things. That working is a man, a woman, and God. The connection. That's that triune we have. A man, there's a woman, and then there's God.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those, that union of three, is comes creation.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if that union is not working, then what's going to happen to the creation? Well, we see that every day you pick up your newspaper and watch some of the stuff these kids are doing. Something's broken. So the Black Reality Think Tank talks about that, looks at solutions, bring on people who are specialists, try to talk about that. And then some of the things that we have had in the past that helped us, we've now turned our back on them. The most critical institution in Black America has been the Black church.
Mm-hmm.
And we turn our back on the church. We talk about them, talking about all they do is talk about that old Jesus stuff. Man, don't you know that fed people? They clothed people that built homes. That's how the church got its strength, because it was feeding people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you remember Reverend Rogers years ago when we would go to church. Sometimes they used to cook dinner down there in the basement.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that.
In the choir and smelling all that fried chicken at the same time. Well, that was about feeding people because everybody didn't have money to buy food.
Oh, yeah.
So what the church did is came together and everybody brought up, that's what they call the potluck. They brought a pot, and if you're lucky, you get the right pot, a good pot. They brought the greens and the rolls and the sweet potato pies, and you sat down on Sunday afternoon and had a wonderful meal.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the things we talk about. We talk about how to rejuvenate that and get that back to place so that we can begin to build those institutions that did help us. All of the Black colleges, the HBCs, most of them started out of churches.
Mm-hmm.
Morehouse, Spelman, Tuskegee, they started in churches. That was the strength. Now, why do we turn our back on the Black church? The banks, the first Black banks came out of churches. Credit unions. Things like that. Yeah. And there's a lot of documentation that tells you that history. And even in the midst of segregation and Jim Crowism, all of that was there, but we still had institutions that made it successful for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You and I came out of a city that they called the Black Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
which was Durham. It wasn't just Tulsa, Oklahoma. Durham was a Black Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
It had the largest Black insurance company in America. It had savings and loans. It had banks. furniture companies, everything that we needed.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to go to no white business at all for anything.
Another question that I wanted to ask is how do you select topics to speak on or to discuss on the program, and who are some of the guests that you've had on your program?
You know, it's kind of like, it's interesting because it's kind of like what you do when you choose a sermon. When you look at a sermon, a lot of times it has to do with things that are going on in the community, things that impact you during the week, things that you see coming up. You say, I got to talk about that.
That's right.
And that's usually the way, you know, I do it. I do it the same way. I said, I need to talk about that. You know, then we'll find a way, find somebody that can speak that way and do it and know a little bit about it, and I can bring them on. I usually choose my guests based on, you know, where they fit in that subject matter, obviously. And sometimes even where they have may have written a book or done something or made a movie, something relevant to that topic area, and I'll ask them to come on. I'll bring on other historians because I don't want people to just listen to me. Listen to other people, too. I have one of your guest speakers at one of your churches has been one of my guests, Dr. Goose Bridges.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Bridges taught at Plano Org and North Carolina Central and other places. A very wonderful historian, powerful historian. I've asked him to come. I've asked you to come. To come on and talk a little bit. We'll talk about the religious community. Reverend Maxwell, that you introduced me to, him. I've had the state senator from Wisconsin on. I've had a candidate running for mayor. I had them on talk about. I didn't want them to talk about running for mayor. I wanted them to talk about the community and why they were running for mayor. So they could begin to give us a little of what they see the problems are. And obviously all of it is geared towards solution. Now, I'm not saying that we can sit there and talk for 2 hours and come up with a solution. That's not what I'm talking about. But it's the beginning process of how to arrive at a solution.
On the program, you have people with some very strong opinions as well on that program. As I said before, most of the people that call in, and I'm not trying to discourage others because we all need to call in and listen if nothing else, but we have a lot of people that call into the Black Reality Think Tank are well-versed, they're well-knowledgeable, and a lot of them have very strong opinions. How do you balance that out to get to your point of where you're trying to go in the program?
Okay, and that's a real good question. Because first of all, I think that we all have a sense of knowledge of what's wrong and what we need to do. I think all of us have that. I think what's missing is that we don't know how to come together sometimes and do it. We can talk about it, but can we do it and make it happen? And how do you make it happen and do that? So. A lot of times, I'm looking particularly at who can probably deliver the best possible ideas around solutions. Who has experienced it? When I talk about prisons, I get somebody that's been to prison. I get them to come on and talk about it. Then I get somebody who manages prison and let them talk about it. So you got to get the people that are in the action, and then obviously those that have studied, those who have lived the life, walk the walk, and then I let them come and talk the talk. I don't want to do talking heads. That's what I call talking heads. And they just get up there and yap. That's not what I want.
Right.
Somebody that can be concrete, can be conclusive, can go with some depth, and help us to sort this mess out. We got some problems.
Yeah, we do.
Really,
I like sometimes you even have psychiatrists, you have policemen, And those are people who work directly in the public, you know, and I like the fact that a lot of times you bring those type of people on who have hands-on experience.
Yeah, yes. I have, now that I don't have access to the university library like I did when I was teaching, I did keep some connections together where I could go into these archives and mm-hmm. find resources that can help me a lot of times promote the show and do a program where I can go get statistics and some of the data and stats that you need to have if you're going to talk about certain topics. You need that. You have to have that. You just can't, like I said, you can definitely just talk from the hip. You know, it's not going to help you.
Right.
Right now, they're trying to erase our ability to study history. The whole critical race theory is being designed to wipe our history out, whitewash it, so that we don't have any history. And that way, if you do that, then our children are going to suffer to have your history. You have to be able to express your culture. One of the greatest things you do, I don't know whether people really understand what you're doing with Gospel Gold. It's not just a music program. It's not what it is, because see, gospel music was the foundation of what got us out of our struggles. It is that music that motivated us, that made us stand up and take pride in ourselves. It was a powerful antidote for us in the midst of all of the lynchings and the shootings and the whips and the chains and the unemployment and all the things that we went through and our ancestors went through as African American preachers. We could go home after all of that picking cotton from sun up to sundown and sit down and sing a good old gospel song. And relieve that pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're doing. See, not only are you just playing the music, you're letting people know where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
You're letting people know Tommy Dorsey, Dr. Dorsey was doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's what we endeavor to do every week.
He sang the blues.
They
used to call him Barrel House Tom. He sang down there where they sell that corn whiskey and stuff like that. He'd go in there and sing the blues, drink corn whiskey, and go to bed, come back Sunday morning, go to church.
Yeah. Same musicians, same people.
Same musicians.
Dr. Rogers, we talked about resources a minute ago and research. For those of us who may not have even thought about reading a lot about our history, name some books that would be instrumental in introducing Black history to our people.
That's good. That's another good question you asked me. Yeah, this is a good one-on-one. There's something that's called anthologies. An anthology is a book with a compilation of writings of different people or with the different same themes and thoughts. There are anthologies written by African Americans where it contains the writings of Booker T. Washington, W.B. Du Bois, Marcus Garvey, Martin Luther King, Paul Lawrence Dunbar, Mary Church Terrell, Mary McLeod Bethune, and everything is in this one book. And if you get a chance to read that and hear from their own words the things that they were going through, that is just very helpful too. I've had anthologies over the years. I've got about four or five of them. And so if I want to know what Mary Church Terrell said about the liberation of Black women, I'll go get my anthology and look up what she did. So, and in there a lot of times are biographies. They have the biography of people that you don't know. that might not be real popular. Like, for instance, there's a woman that a lot of people may not have heard of. Her name is Frances Watkins Harper.
Mm-hmm.
Frances Watkins Harper. I was just reading a poem by her that was in a cycle. I was going to use it for the radio show tomorrow, called Bury Me in a Free Land. And she was writing around 1890. So that anthology has that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can take that and study from their own words what they were going through. And nothing beats that.
Okay.
There's a thing in there on Fannie Lou Hamer, who's my hero. I love Fannie Lou Hamer. That Mississippi sharecropper was no joke. That was a strong black woman. And you want to teach your daughters to be your Fannie Lou Hamer. We took a group of sixth grade kids down to Mississippi, down to her. We took them to Money, Mississippi, so that they could see the house, the store in the house that Emmett Till was killed from. And we took them over to see the house that Fannie Lou Hamer lived in. It was in Rural, Mississippi. Rural is the name of the city where Fannie Lou there, and Money, Mississippi is where Emmett Till was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And we took those kids down there and we let them stand over the grave. We told them to go stand over Fannie Lou Hamer's grave, get on one knee, put your hand on her grave, and say a prayer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we took pictures of that. And that's on my website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a powerful notion and for kids to do and experience history. You can tell them history, but they need to experience it. They need to go down to Atlanta and look at Martin Luther King's house where he lived. He lived in a shotgun house.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have no mansion.
That's right.
You could go to his front door and look right out the back door.
Mm-hmm.
Right there down in Atlanta, Georgia, down the street from where he's buried. These weren't rich people. We took them over to Tuskegee so they could see Booker T. Washington stuff and what he was doing and what George Washington Carver did. George Washington Carver lived in a one-room shack. You should see what it looked like.
As we begin to study more about history, I'd encourage everyone to get a library card, to go to your public library. There's so many books there that can help you if you are not well-versed in African-American history. And you can find many books that will give you and enlighten you and give you some – and perhaps it may spark others, more interest in the field of history. Dr. Rogers, here's the thing I wanted to ask as well before we go. It's a two-point question. As a historian How do historians chronicle things? I mean, obviously you can't write about everything. So how do you all find, I thank God for historians, how do you all chronicle things?
Well, you got to first of all document what you're saying. Everything I've just told you today from 7 o'clock for my time, or 8 o'clock your time, to right now, I can tell you exactly where to go read it.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. There's nothing I said that I can't tell you to go find it and see where it was researched.
Right.
That's number one. And then number two, as you said, you have to have a library resource. You got to have something where you can go. And everything you read not going to always be true either.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be able to crisscross stuff and crisscross history documentation.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll tell you anything, but you got to be able to look at it and make a determination on your own whether it's true or not true. Did the FBI kill Martin Luther King?
Mm-hmm.
The books didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
They say James Earl Ray shot him. Well,
right.
King's family said he didn't. that somebody else shot King, not James Earl Ray. So the historian got the court.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he even confessed to the family that he didn't do it.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And he had no reason to say that because he had already, you know, done his time, you know, so.
Exactly.
Another question before we go off. As a historian, what do you see now for our people? Where should we be right now? What should we be doing as a people right now?
We have got to educate our children in a better circumstance than what we're doing. COVID has destroyed. They were going to school virtual.
Mm-hmm.
That meant nothing to them. They weren't doing it. They weren't looking and getting any real study habits. They lost the ones that they did have. So we've got to develop something to be able to better educate our children. First Baptist might need to start a BTU again.
Mm-hmm.
Even though your money might be a little low or you don't want to put any more money into anything like that, you're going to lose your children if you don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have to create a BTU, Baptist Training Union. They had one back in the 1800s. And you could go and learn. And not only just teach them the Bible, but teach them other things about themselves. That's number one. We need to go back. A lot of our people are starving.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to tell you that.
I know.
They're not going to tell you they're hungry and they're not eating properly. You ask them, you doing all right? Everything all right? You got food? Yeah, I got food. I'm all right. Ain't got nothing. Can of pork beans up in the chip. And some saltine crackers. That's all they got. It's not like what it used to be, where we mm-hmm. really made sure our community and our people. You know, but our pride sometimes got in the way. We stopped listening. You know, I ain't going to deal with all them folks. They get on my nerves. I ain't deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Lose our community.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so funny, though. COVID has straightened all that out. It has really altered the way we live, and it's going to last for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know that. It is definitely. I ask you all the time about what COVID has done to the church.
Oh, yeah. It's caused us to do a lot of things different, I'll tell you that.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the same with the family. A lot of things different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Rogers, we got about 2 to 3 minutes left. Anything you would like to add as we close out tonight? I thank you so very much for being with us. I wanted to come and bring a program for people who maybe not aware so much of Black history or history in general. And I wanted to do that tonight. I thank you so much for coming on tonight to do that. So do you have any final words you would like to say?
The final word is I thank you and Gospel Gold for what you are doing. Mm-hmm. This is the old Black church. What you're doing right now is what my grandma used to sing and your grandma used to sing out on the front porch. Give me that old-time religion. It was good for my mother, good for my father, and it's good enough for me. That's
Amen.
What you're doing. You're doing old-time religion. Where you're working and you're being centered around people. Religion is about people.
Amen. Well, thank you again so very much. Again, I want all of you to tune in tomorrow night to the Black Reality Think Tank on the Time for Awakening Network. You will not be disappointed. You will have a wonderful time hearing the discussion about our people. And then don't forget, on the 28th of February, Gospel Gold will be back on Blog Talk Radio, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. God bless you, and thank you again, Dr. Rogers. We'll talk soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise
high as the
listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark man has taught us. Oh, sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun. Let us march on till victory.